Julie, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm so happy to talk to you. We haven't spoken in person for a little while, and it's really kind of you to jump on and be a guest for me. I really appreciate it.
I'm excited. This sounds really fun.
Oh, it is. Well, I'm finding it enormous fun. I mean, I'm calling everybody I know and saying, "Do you mind if I talk to you for 15 minutes and record the conversation?" And everybody has been like, "Okay, sure." So, Julie, would you tell us about yourself, please?
Well, what part of myself are you most interested in,
Well,
for the
absolutely
purposes of your
everything.
podcast?
Well, absolutely everything, because I find you fascinating in every possible way. But would you start off talking about the conservation and engagement strategy? Because I have just got an electric car.
Oh, good for you. That's very exciting. I will be getting one when I move someplace where I can charge regularly, which I am not in that situation right now. But so I work mostly with electric utilities and other companies that support electric utilities on conservation and engagement strategies. Basically, they all have mandates around reducing carbon and conserving energy, and they get subsidized through government to do this. So they're not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts necessarily, but they know it's the right thing to do, and they're all working together. And I'm in California now. I moved down from Seattle last year around this time. In fact, it'll be 1 year tomorrow that we moved. And so I work with them to help develop programs and outreach and strategies around how to engage people like you and me in these programs, to reduce the amount of electricity we use and to use it more efficiently, smarter, how to adopt new technologies that reduce carbon. And make our communities healthier and stronger and more resilient. So that's pretty much what I do on the professional front. Do a lot of writing and a lot of reports, and I used to do a lot of workshops before COVID.
I just realized that my car, I got it at Fiat. She's a tiny little Fiat called Tiffany because she's that color blue. She actually came from California. I remember you and I were talking about, I mean, she must have had to be charged a ton to get her from California to Seattle.
Yeah, or they put her on a flatbed. That's quite
Oh.
possible. But I will say that my sister had a Fiat all electric a few years ago, and I don't know if they've changed their tune, but I know that Fiat made electric cars sort of as a way to get around some of the emissions regulations in California. So they made them specifically for California, and did a sort of limited production of them. Now they've probably flipped the switch to making something more regularly because California has such ambitious goals and mandates around electrification, and transportation is a big part of that. So more electric vehicles on the road, more infrastructure implemented, less carbon, blah, blah. So.
She had a California GPS. So every time I put in home, she kept wanting to go back to California, which I don't blame her. I mean, there's a ton more sunshine down there, and she and I are probably in the same mindset. Like, I think both of us wanted to head back down to the beach. It took me a little while to actually persuade her that no, she did have to stay in Seattle, and she did have to suffer through the winter with me. But I don't think they're actually.
It's
Oh gosh, and I'm staring outside at grey, with a bit of grey, with a hint of grey, kind of surrounded by grey. And I've
wet
got my seasonal affective disorder light on full bore, and I've just been told you can get enormous ones that will light up rooms.
Oh,
So,
that sounds better. I had one of those. I had one before we moved, And I found it gave me a headache because they say you're supposed to put it on, you know, close by so that it shines sort of at the side of your face or something. And I found that it gave me a headache. So I stopped using it.
Well, I will keep you posted. When I create a movie set in the house full of SAD lights, I will keep you posted.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing about Fiat is that I have a feeling they're not actually making, that they're moving away from bringing Fiat into America. I don't want to talk about cars. It's not my favorite subject, but I do think I am probably at the tail end of getting an electric Fiat, cute as she is. But you know what happens? And I can't believe I'm talking about but every time I turn on the demister, or the heater, her power seems to go all the way down. And so I've been spending most of the winter, not that I've been driving much, basically wearing a winter coat, a winter scarf, bundled up so that I could wind the windows down so I can actually see through the fog. The dog is not impressed. I've had to wrap the dog in a blanket.
Yeah, your car is a beach girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she and I are definitely on the same page. Hey, what is the, I worked out that the DOE, because I'm on your LinkedIn, I'm stalking you on LinkedIn. You have not friended me on LinkedIn. Could you please connect with me?
Oh, yes, of course. I'm sorry. I will do that.
I very much appreciate it. Harder to stalk you if I can't see what you're up to.
But right.
Department of Energy, what is a weatherization assistance program? I mean, what are they trying to do? Pay you money to get good weather?
No, although that would be awesome. No, the Weatherization Assistance Program is a federally funded program that's been around for a long time. And what it does is it provides home energy upgrades to families that are income qualified. So basically low and moderate income families. Who have high electricity bills. And so the program pays for upgrading systems and weatherize. So weatherizing a home means you basically seal the gaps so that your, you know, warm air isn't flying out the window when you turn on your heater through cracks and gaps in the structure. And so it's a very, very effective program. It's been around for a long time. A lot of money goes into this program. There's another program, which is basically the umbrella program under which WAP exists. And that's called LIHEAP. And it stands for Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program. And that's another program that I help my clients tap into, where a utility bill can actually get paid through the federal program. So if you're unable to pay your heating or cooling bill because you're either low income, but more importantly now with COVID, if you've lost your job and you're unable to pay your utility bill, you can get a bill credit of up to, I think, $420. So if you haven't been able to pay your bill for a few months or whatever, you can apply for that program pretty much anywhere in the country, and it will provide a bill credit to your utility. So that's another thing that I've been working on is utilities have not traditionally connected with the LIHEAP program in their area because they haven't really had to. But now that there are so many people who've lost their jobs and it's apparently getting worse, that they can basically become connected to their local agency who administers the program and help funnel customers who are unable to pay their bills to the program, therefore reducing arrearages and avoiding power shutoffs. So that's another thing that I've been working on here.
That is it. That is wonderful. We are recording this on the 4th of January. I record podcasts in advance. So please do follow up with this, because by the time this get published, we will still be cold.
Oh, and yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in other states where it's, you know, extreme heat is the problem, then it's AC. Now, a lot of homes are heated through gas. So I think that LIHEAP also covers gas bills. So it's not just electricity, depending on what your needs are. And then in California, there's a program here that's also called CARES. I know that there's the CARES Act, but and that will cover, you can pay one bill with your CARES money, and your other, like, let's say you can pay gas with one and electricity with the other. So there are programs and options out there. And part of the problem, I think, is that the utilities are sort of a central point for all of us, right? We all get power one way or another. Even if you have solar on your home, you still have a relationship with your local utility because they own the system. They own the grid that your solar panels are putting out energy for your home, but then the rest of it goes back onto the grid. So they're a central point for connecting with people around energy bills. So why not have them be a more direct link for people to find out about these programs and be able to take advantage of them? There doesn't seem to be any downside.
There isn't a downside. Mm-hmm. Next time you're in Seattle, you've got to come over, assuming it's safe and, you know, masks 6 feet mm-hmm. apart, all that kind of thing, because you will laugh your head off at our house. It was built in 1967 and they never paved around the house. So it's sliding down the hill. It wants to be a houseboat. We're very fortunate. We live near a lake and it is determined to turn itself into a boat, which would be fine by me.
You have it tied to a tree or something?
well, that's just it. I mean, you could roll marbles and they would just slide down, and there's still a lot of doors and things that, anyway, we had to, I say we, but obviously very professional people who will never come near us ever, ever again because it was so difficult, raised the front of the house millimeter by millimeter, but we have 1,000 square feet of glass, which is very, very old, and the windows were made individually, which means that every single window leaks because as they raised it, they moved away slightly from the window frame. So I deeply, deeply apologize to the environment because we are not helping. We do wear a lot of winter clothes inside the house, and it turns into a greenhouse in summer. So we have privacy, so my husband refuses, but I'm obviously wandering around in the altogether. But I do humbly apologize, which is partly mitigated by the fact we both have electric cars. He has a Tesla, and I think a Tesla was on your vision board.
Yeah, more because it's sort of, you know, it's the electric vehicle with the longest range, a 200 mile range. But I think when I get an electric vehicle, I will not get a Tesla. I think I will get something else.
How wonderful that there are choices.
I know. And there's more and more choices, and to the point where I test drove a few and I thought, you know what, this is a car I would lease because the technology is moving so quickly that there will be new cars every year going forward, especially in California. So why not lease for, you know, 2 to 3 years and then jump into a new one? And they also have programs for used electric vehicles for people who want to buy them. So the utilities are providing rebates on used EVs. So that's another option for people.
Tiffany, my car Tiffany was secondhand.
Uh-huh.
Which is... Very happy. She was a lease, and she's now mine, so I'm very grateful. Hey, the other day I was talking to Deb, and she and I both learned to ride horses. That's overstating it. I have sat on a horse. I started sitting on a horse again at the age of 45.
Nice. But
I know. And I fell off the horse as we were going around a corner, but I have a very hard skill. Oh, it was completely my fault. I was distracted and not holding on. But you have had a relationship with horses for a very long time.
Yes. Yes. I started riding when I was 6. I actually, there was a place, I grew up in Los Angeles, and there was a place where the Beverly Center is now. Actually, the Pony Park was where Cedar Sinai is now, which is, you know, one of the world's major hospitals. And they had this little place where, you know, you could ride a pony. And it was permanent. It wasn't a traveling show. And I think I was 3 the first time I was taken there, and that was it. I was just done. Like, I could not. It was pony, 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 pony from that moment on. And so, yeah, I learned. I took my first actual lesson when I was six, and rode hunters and jumpers growing up in Southern California, and went to horse shows every month, and rode on the East Coast for a summer, and that was really fun when I was 16. And since then, have ridden off and on, depending on my ability to get to the barn. And one of the hardest parts for me about being in Seattle, I started a new job there. I basically started a new career there. The utility career was not, I had not done that work before, and I was traveling so much, and I didn't get to ride for a few years, and then found a barn in Woodinville that I could ride at. But it was, 50 minutes out there and 50 minutes back without traffic. So one of my visions about moving back to Southern California is that I would get to ride, four or five times a week, and now I am. And the barn is 8 minutes away, and in Burbank at the Los Angeles Equestrian Center, which is a beautiful facility if you ever want to come down here. And yeah, it's just been really satisfying. I ride well enough that I don't have to pay for lessons. I don't have to pay someone to let me ride their horse. I help with overflow at a barn where I used to be an assistant trainer to my friend David Josiah at Morning Mist Farm. If anybody's interested in hunter jumper riding, he's really good. And I ride the excess. I try to stay on the smaller ones. He's got ginormous, like dinosaur sized horses from Europe. And he's like, what about that? I'm like, yeah, that's too big for me. I'm older now, and I don't feel like falling off is not on the plan. Falling off and hurting myself is not on the plan. I did fall off a pony the other day, but it was a short distance to the ground, so I was not hurt. That's what I do. And it's been heavenly, especially during COVID, to have something I can do outside. Everybody out there wears masks when we're in the barn, and we all have face coverings once we're on the horse. But once you're riding by yourself in a ring, you can take the mask off, and it's just liberating. And to be outside in the sunshine every day, get some real exercise is the thing that's kept me sane throughout this time. So, and keeps me sane on a regular basis anyway. So
here's to sanity. I can't claim, I claim a tenuous link to sanity, but I do very much appreciate it in others.
Yeah.
You also were employed at one time braiding horses' manes and tails.
Yes, I've had many. I'm the woman of many careers, but many years ago, I was pursuing a career in screenwriting, and I had a writing partner that I worked with, who I'm still friends with, and we got pretty far. I mean, we got agents at ICM, and we got snappy managers and an attorney, and we were going on meetings at Paramount. And so it was all seemed very close to possible. And I still had to have another job that allowed flexibility and allowed me to, pay my rent while we were pursuing these other jobs and these writing jobs. And so I used to braid horses' manes and tails because horses need a hairdo when they go to a horse show. And because it's a tradition, not because it actually serves any purpose anymore. It used to be something that people would do when they were fox hunting to keep the brambles and sticks and branches out of the horse's manes and tails. They would braid them. So now that's something that I used to do, and it was actually quite lucrative, but very, very physically demanding. And I would work all night because the horses needed to be ready for the morning for the horse show when it started. And then I'd go home and sleep for a couple hours and then go to a meeting at Warner Brothers where I had to appear coherent and smart.
And you're both of those things, but after spending all night, you'd be physically exhausted, and there's only so much caffeine can do.
Well, and let me just say that the rest of the world does not understand nighttime workers. They do not understand the dire need for sleep during the day. They're like, it's daylight. What's the problem? Why can't I, hammer this thing right next to your window? Or practice my skateboard moves right outside on the sidewalk. So these are the things that were very challenging. And at a certain point, I just decided getting the job was harder than I wanted to make my life. And I didn't want to have two jobs. And that's when I switched to environmental awareness raising, which is, why? How did we go from screenwriting to that? But I thought it was time to, there was room there. There was space there to create something that I could do specifically to contribute. And the green, quote unquote, the green movement had now, because of Al Gore, gone from, something for crunchy granola hippie people to talk about to mainstream. And in my opinion, it was all very dire. It was all very sad. It didn't seem very hopeful. And I thought, someone's going to have to add some, how do we Jon Stewart this up, basically? And I had been a comedy writer. So I thought, well, maybe I can help frame things in a way that's a little more engaging, a little less dire, a little less hopeless, and provide people with, like, not only are there things you can do, but here's a list of things you can do. So that's how I got my start there. And I did worked for a company that specialized in marketing environmental causes and activities. And one of the things we did was World Wildlife Federation, which is an international nonprofit. They used to have something called Earth Hour. Now, I don't actually know if Earth Hour still exists, but at the time it was, they got the whole world to turn their lights off for an hour in March. And so they would engage cities all over the world, and they did satellite photography. So you could see, you could actually see from space that cities had, the lights had gone off. And the city of Los Angeles was a flagship city one year that I did it. And our firm, the firm that I worked for, led the charge on getting major landmarks in Los Angeles turned off for an hour, which included LAX and City Hall and the Getty Museum, Capitol Records. It was pretty cool. It was really fun. And that was like one of the first big projects that I worked on that really got me hooked on this. How do we engage people and becoming aware and then taking action?
Julie, that's absolutely incredible. I want to ask you a question about clothes, because theoretically I'm supposed to be talking to you about your closet.
Sure, but I love clothes. Ugh.
Well, I was going to ask you about your singing, because I've heard you're singing and you are really good, and I know you have a musician in your life, but you're most welcome to tell me about what you're wearing in California instead and what your favorite pieces are, or you could just tell me what you like to wear when you're singing.
Well, I don't really sing outside of a living room. I used to sing in public, and I remember once I sang at a club in New York City called Don't Tell Mamas, which I think has closed, but it was on Restaurant Row, and it was a great, great venue and had been there since the 50s, I believe. And at the time I worked at Planet Hollywood because I was studying acting, and I helped open the first Planet Hollywood. Sorry, everybody. And So I got the whole restaurant, everybody who were, there were 300 employees, and I got probably 150 of them to come see me sing over a period of 3 days. So of course they kept going, come back and sing again, you know? But I remember I went on this mad chase for a black suit, and it had to be the perfect black suit. I wanted something I could wear no shirt underneath. So it had to be high enough on the chest that it was covered the boobs, but low enough that it was still sexy. And I got a little collarbone, and then some pants that were sort of longer and maybe a little flowy. And then I had this pair of black satin Chanel shoes that my dad had gotten me. My father was a filmmaker, and we had, I worked on a movie with him, and Chanel was having a sale. And this pair of shoes, they were quilted, pointed toe, slingbacks with a 3-inch heel, and they had a rose, black rose on the toe. And they were so beautiful that you literally like, and so flimsy that, and too small, by the way. So they were too small. I'd have them stretched, but I could barely walk in them because the heel was flimsy and they were too small for me. So I was like, I need the perfect suit to go with these shoes so that I can sit on a stool and look amazing while I'm singing.
You know, that is sheer genius to think of getting a stool, because that way those shoes right. Sound lickable.
Oh, I ended up giving them to a friend who could fit in them. But I almost wish I'd kept them because they were so glorious.
But well, I think we can get some Chanel shoes again in your future, preferably on sale, but you know, a Chanel shoe, if it fits properly, you have that for life. And that is very true. Energy efficient.
That is right. And I have another pair of shoes that my sister gave me because she's stopped wearing fancy shoes for the most part. But her boyfriend had bought this pair of red, shiny, they're like ruby slippers. And they are patent leather, and they're flats. And they are like butter inside, and they were very expensive, and they were made in Italy. And there's just something about a really good pair of shoes that makes you remember why you pay that amount of money. Cause I, like you said, I think I'll have these forever so long as I don't wear them every day, you know?
And the thing is, you can replace the heel tips. You can get them resold. There are things to take care of shoes. There's a cost per wear element. Better one pair of amazing shoes that make you remember how incredible you are than a whole lot of cheap ones that are going to damage your feet.
That's right.
I'm going to give myself a quick plug here. I am doing Zoom Ready workshops, and they're free because I really care what is behind people when they're on camera, because it visually upsets me if it doesn't look great. This is my actual motivation. It's not to serve and to be there for you. It's because it bugs me. So free Zoom Ready workshops because I care about what's behind you. Julie, aroha, aroha, aroha. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate this, and thank you for all the work you are doing in the environmental space. And I visualize, I'm sending out a strong manifestation that those Chanel shoes in some form and the perfect size with the rose on the tip are going to come back into your life.
They have to be a lower heel because I don't wear heels anymore.
Oh, tell me about it. For those of you who are wearing stilettos, please switch to platforms. Stilettos are so bad for your feet. Yeah, and believe me, you will feel it. You will feel it as you grow older and wiser.
Yeah.
Julie, thank you so much.
It's been really fun. And I love what you're doing. And I wish you all the best of luck. And I'm here to help whenever you need it.
Yeah, you really are. I'm really grateful to have you in my life. Bye, Julie.
Bye.